LegalizeFreedom.com. Why are we here? Where do we come from? Where are we going? From the nature of reality to the future of humanity. Listen without limits. Unchain your brain. Change your thinking. Change your life. LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greetings and welcome once again to LegalizeFreedom.com. I'm your host, Greg Moffat, and my guest today is Alan Pierce, who joins us to discuss his book, Coma, A Near-Death Experience, The Beautiful, Disturbing, and Dangerous World of the Unconscious. Every day around the world, thousands of people are placed in medically induced comas. For some coma survivors, the experience is an utter blank. Others lie paralyzed, aware of everything around them, but unable to move, speak, or even blink. Many experience alternate lives spanning decades, lives they grieve once awakened. Some encounter ultra-vivid nightmares, while others undergo a deep spiritual oneness with the universe or say that they have glimpsed the afterlife. Examining the experiences of those who have survived comas, the authors explore the mysterious levels of consciousness near-death experiences unlock. They demonstrate how a key element of the brain is switched off by coma-inducing sedatives, allowing the mind to break free from the body and experience a greater expansion of consciousness. Revealing the dangers of deep sedation and other intensive care procedures, the authors show how comas are unnecessary more often than not, and that many coma survivors go on to suffer lasting cognitive and physical harm. Exploring proven alternatives to medically induced coma, they share tried and tested protocols that are much safer. Showing how we can avoid the suffering caused by comas, this book reveals the wide variety of conscious states that can arise during coma, both positive and negative, and how accepting the reality of these experiences is crucial not only to the recovery of coma survivors, but also to the field of consciousness studies. Hello and welcome, Alan, and thank you so much for joining us today on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greg, thank you so much. Really excited to be here. A lot we can possibly talk about today.
Absolutely. It's taken us a while with one thing and another things happening in our lives, but here we are finally. Today we're going to be talking about a book you recently published, Coma, A Near-Death Experience, The Beautiful, Disturbing, and Dangerous World of the Unconscious. Before we dive into that, just let listeners know a little bit about your background and your work in general.
Yes, I'm a journalist, and I've co-written the book with my wife, who at the time was a private investigator. And my background is never to have covered anything like the subject here. I don't do medical. I don't do spiritual. I do foreign affairs as a rule. And I sort of stopped doing that. And then COVID happened. And I found myself, I think like a lot of us, watching too much TV news during COVID. And I was wondering why so many people with COVID around the world were being placed into medically induced comas. I mean, great thing, possibly. Just how does it work? Why do they do that? And I started looking into it. And there's an official medical explanation, which goes on the lines of it's an essential tool in critical care, has been for 50 years, enables the patient to have the deepest, most restorative form of sleep, and that the event itself should be a complete blank in their lives. That's the starting point. It turns out that everything I just said is not true. The events that people experience within coma are described as hallucinations and false memories. But if you look for parallels elsewhere, we're seeing the near-death experience. We're seeing things that mystics and gurus and shaman have been seeking since the dawn of time. And it's happening to people inside coma. Not everyone, and not everyone's having the same experience. But people are having a range of experiences that we can find parallels for elsewhere. And yet, the medical world is just all too swift to dismiss it.
Yeah, well, I have to say that a lot of, you know, writing about reviews of books and films and media in general these days The latest book is a must read, or the latest movie is a must see. And that's just, it loses its value after a while. But this is one book, I would say yours, that, if people only read something off, they're away from their usual beaten track this year, make it this one, because it's incredible. It's very well written for a start, which is not always the case. A lot of writing style can just be perfunctory. This is actually just very well done. But to have these experiences laid out in this way, and I've been doing consciousness research for like most of my adult life, and this is one angle that you're coming at that I hadn't quite considered. Now, I've done lots of work on near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, etc., but the actual state of coma I hadn't really considered, because I'd not dealt with it personally. I'd never been in a coma, never knew anyone close to me that had been, whether they spontaneously went into it or was induced, none of that. I allowed that it was just what it said it was. These people are heavily sedated. It's just like being asleep. I should have known better, really, because again, we go to sleep each night, most of us. We dream. We have all sorts of experiences in that realm, that dimension of consciousness. So the fact that I hadn't really considered what a coma patient is undergoing was amazing to myself. And I think that what you just mentioned there, and it's borne out in the title of the book, people have sometimes amazingly beautiful experiences. Sometimes they're disturbing. And the dangerous aspect comes into this in not only that people's mental state, but also physically, they can come out of coma. Obviously, we know this physically, damaged, deteriorated very profoundly, sometimes in life-changing ways. But to be left with mental health issues that people sometimes never recover from was really quite shocking to me.
Great. I mean, yeah, isn't there a lot to talk about? And it is curious because it has taken a journalist and a PI to investigate something that really the medical world or science should have been looking at for the last 50 years, and they haven't. And it's just because, you get one answer. And being a journalist, I don't always take the first answer as definitive. Once you just start looking, and we started finding coma survivors. And we looked on the coma survivors Facebook page. We were kindly invited to sort of sit in the shadows, as it were, and just watch what people posted. Now, you mentioned people coming out of the experience not well. So many people, regardless of why they were in hospital in the first place, were reporting a surprising number of ailments that were the same, cognitive and physical. To my mind, there were alarm bells going off. Now, if I'm seeing this, why hasn't somebody else spotted this? And this appeared, as I looked at it, to be a direct consequence of the hospital experience. And then people keep talking of nightmares and coma dreams and so forth. The thing to bear in mind, if you're in a coma, your brain is switched off, it's flatlining. Now, we've actually demonstrated in the book that the brain and the mind are not the same thing, because here's the brain. It would be flatlining if connected to an EEG brain scanner. And yet the mind is incredibly active. Now, people are having within coma near-death experiences, which makes some sense, I guess, if you think that they're near death, otherwise they wouldn't be in intensive care. The medication is pushing them that much further. People are getting the most exquisitely beautiful events, recounting to us from within coma. Others are getting events so horrendous, so dark, it just totally blows one's mind. It's beyond the imagination, so much of them. And then there's another one that people get, which is an alternate life in one form or another. Some people experience alternate lives like a slideshow, one after another, like here's a death you experience, here's another death you experience, here's another death you experienced. Others find themselves living minute by minute an alternate life that may be spanning decades, and yet they're only in the hospital bed for, say, 2 weeks. When they come out of a coma, oftentimes if they've been on a ventilator, they can't speak for weeks at a time. And they've got no one to share these experiences with. By the time their voice comes back, they're often down the line, they're out of intensive care. If they try to tell people about the alternate lives or the nightmarish events, they're simply dismissed along the lines of, until Recently, you've been drugged up to the eyeballs. What do you expect? But there are no drugs or cocktail of drugs that anyone knows of that will give you an alternate life spanning decades or just days passing this world.
Yeah, I think, and that's also very common in people who have near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences, life-changing ones that they're very reluctant to talk about. All the books I've read about these experiences, to some extent or other, mention this, but they've done what you've done. Some of the other writers have done what you've done. They've gone and spoken to people firsthand and encouraged them to tell their stories. And these people have, quite often very relieved to have been able to do it after all this time. Because when we have these seemingly really subjective experiences, especially if they're negative, people feel very alone. Like, am I losing my mind? Why isn't anyone else experiencing this? But of course, because the medical establishment, mental or physical, are not really dealing with this, there isn't the literature out there. That sort of even just the general knowledge that this is a thing. Now that's changing, especially as moving into the 21st century, but not fast enough, I don't think, because it has profound implications just for all our individual and collective life, and the future of the planet. Actually, that's how big I think this is. But talking about, I think one of the things that left me putting the book down and staring out the window, kind of am I trying to imagine the horror of it, is when people who are in a coma, apparently, as you say, brain is flatlining, nothing going on whatsoever. They're just in a black void of nothingness from which they will eventually emerge, we hope, is that they're often not unaware. And if anyone's ever read about the horror or spoken to anyone who suffered from sleep paralysis, some of these patients are there. Everyone around them is assuming they're in that black void, and they're aware of the surroundings. They can, to some extent, hear things, but they're being regarded as, but they can't move, they can't speak, they can't move, they're completely paralyzed. And it reminded me, the first thing, one of the first things I thought of was a book. I've never read it, but I read about it. And people can look this up online. There's a Wikipedia page for it. A book by, I think the guy was a journalist as well, Dalton Trumbo. And he wrote a book about a Vietnam War casualty. And this book's called Johnny Got His Gun. And what it portrays is this guy who'd been horrendously injured in the Vietnam War. He said he's lost his arms, his legs in an explosion, most of his face. He cannot see, he cannot speak, he cannot hear. And it occurred to me, if some of the people in induced comas or otherwise are having that sort of experience, that'll be my idea of hell, literal hell.
So many people described their experience as hell. I have to say, not everyone can recount an experience within coma. Those that do vary enormously, and some are truly are beautiful. But the dark, horrendous ones, they are just beyond the imagination. I mean, and I can go into all manner of detail, but just to give you a picture, for example, one woman was telling me that inside of coma, when people talk of a near-death experience, more often than not, they will say it's more real than reality. People in coma will often say they woke up within their coma and found themselves in clear consciousness having an event. In the event I'm thinking of at the moment happened to one of my coma survivors who helped us with the book. She wakes up and finds herself hanging from a meat hook, floating over the sea, on a conveyor belt where women in front of her were having their hands chopped off and fed to sharks. And this is just one tiny, tiny little element. And she's stuck in that nightmarish world. And for so many, it's so strange. Even if you wanted to mention it, you don't know where to begin. If you mention it to a doctor, for sure you're going to get diagnosed as having something seriously wrong with you. If you mention it to a loved one, your husband, your wife, or what have you, I mean, how seriously are they going to take that? People within coma were recounting to me alternate lives in which they have other husbands, other wives, different children. They gave birth. They come back to this world. And the world they've just left, the one within their coma, seems far sharper, more clear, more real than this world. And they can't believe necessarily that this is the right world. And how do they begin to tell someone who's claiming to be their partner, they're not even sure if they are, how can they tell them about these events? So the majority of people that we spoke to have used the word mad, crazy, whatever, to describe how they feel. They are just utterly alone. Some people manage to find other coma survivors. I mentioned the Facebook coma survivors group. So many people come out of the experience feeling a little groggy or whatever and being told, yes, don't worry about it, you'll get over it. And finding that they're not getting over it, finding that they're having the most appalling flashbacks to events that should not possibly have happened. And they just have no one to talk to and they keep it to themselves. Since the book came out, which is only just a couple of weeks, we've had coma survivors contacting us and saying, hold it a second, I thought this was just me. You're saying this is happening to other people, to lots of other people? And the answer is, yeah, millions of people, because this is now standard medical procedure to place someone into prolonged deep sedation, has been for the last 50 years, and it's gone into overdrive since COVID.
I can't recall if you've, website-wise, if you've got something devoted to the book, but maybe you should get like a forum or something where people can, because aside from the book being very eloquently written, the most powerful element really is the personal testimony from these survivors. And you're only going to get more of these stories coming now that this has opened the floodgates. I was going to come to this later, but there's a couple of points here relating to what you just said. Firstly, on a personal note, after I put your book down, I was talking to my girlfriend about it, and this is a kind of reinforcing how I generally felt anyway. But I said, listen, if something happens, if I fall into a coma, and I said, and it looks like it's bad, I did know, I used to work with a guy who fell into a coma and just never came out of it. He died. And I said, but don't allow me to be placed in a coma. I said, I'm quite serious about this. Let me go. It has to happen sometime, you know? Don't just play this game of like maintaining life in the body for any reason. So that's a personal note. But you mentioned people experiencing entire lives in coma, even though that, you know, they're been under for a relatively short time. Just, I can't remember if it was just before or no, it was just before I read your book. I'd watched a film that must be at least 10 years old. It's called Inception. It was quite a popular
Yes,
mainstream
of
movie.
course.
Yeah, Christopher Nolan. And well, part of the plot concerns dreaming and different levels of dreaming and deeper levels of dreaming. But ultimately, these become levels of reality itself because when the protagonists enter these deeper and deeper dream states, they're experiencing things in a different way in terms of different types of time. But the experience is very real while they're in there. And the lead protagonist, his wife, they get into the deepest dream state that's possible. They're inducing this deliberately, by the way, and that's part of the, you know, the plot. But they go into this deepest state and they're experiencing, I can't remember how long they're under, not long, but they have a life together, different from the one they're having in the quote unquote real world, but it lasts for 50 years. And he is more in control of the psychological dimension of this and trying to maintain a sense of what is what. Even though all of this work or the film and your work actually makes us question what reality actually is, when she comes out of that state, she can never accept that the life they, again, quote unquote, actually have is the real one. She said, we've got to go back. We've got to go back to our real lives. And he's like, honey, this is our real life. She said, no, it can't be. What all those beautiful things we experienced, you know? And she can never accept this. And she ends up, plot spoiler, by the way, plot spoiler. She ends up committing suicide in this dimension because she does not believe that that's real life. And she believes if she kills herself that she'll wake up in that dream state with her husband and child.
It's as if we are in the same ballpark here. So often when people it's different for everybody. You know, some people may come out of their coma and immediately recognize their friends and family. Not a problem. Others just don't know who they are. One person told me when she came out of a coma, she didn't know what humans were. An awful lot of people have lost language for some reason. And I don't know. More than once, many a time in point of fact, people have said, I wish I had not come back. And, you know, in the case of Inception, They're inducing these things. Well, if you go back through time and just see what mystics and gurus have done, putting themselves to the deepest recesses of caves, cutting themselves off from the physical world, communing with the spirit world, and the things that they find and they report there are the things that people are reporting within coma. Something distinct is happening. They are, I believe, other dimensions. And I believe people in coma are touching these other dimensions in the same way that people experimenting with the Amazonian mystic brew ayahuasca are experiencing other dimensions. The similarities between events within coma for some people and events that people report having taken ayahuasca or its active ingredient MDMT are just too close to be dismissed. And it seems to my mind very clearly that people are experiencing other levels of existence. In the case of the alternate lives, everyone that has been told to me has been set in the almost immediate past or distant past. So it's entirely possible that they may have been tapping into their past lives in some way. Nick, who's in the book, and he had pneumonia and sepsis. He was in hospital. He was down in a coma for 2 weeks. He spent 20 years straight run in the 1960s and 70s Midwest. He got called up in his coma to go fight in the US Army in an alternate Southeast Asian war and can talk in detail about that. Comes back. Has a kind of madcap life, range of different girlfriends, eventually settles down, small town life, meets a girl, they have a baby. Next thing you know, he wakes up in this world, opens his eyes, and there's this raven-haired woman saying she's his fiancée, and he hasn't got a clue who she is. And because he can't speak because of vocal cords, he might want to say, I think you're in the wrong room, you got the wrong person. But how do you make sense of this? He came back very well, Nick. But there are others who are just trapped as if they're half in the coma world, they're half in this world. That this world just doesn't seem clear anymore. And the people, the friends, their family feel like actors, like they've actually found themselves in the plot of The Invasion of the Body Snatchers, to name another movie.
Yeah, and these you mentioned, what mystics, ancient and modern, have been attempting to do, and you mentioned, ayahuasca. The commonality of these experiences, I've already mentioned near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences of various types. People might want to see the worker Rick Strassman, who's administered DMT to volunteers under strict medical conditions and medical observation, and he's documented that. All of these different types of experiences, so much that I've read. In everything from seemingly diametrically opposed areas as occult philosophy and quantum physics, all of it's pointing to, these experiences are all, have things in common. Many of them do, I should say. But all of this is pointing to that not only are there different levels of reality, but the one that you and I and listeners are currently in may be just the tiniest sliver of a much wider reality.
Yeah, that's how I see it. We're getting a miserable trickle of consciousness whilst we're having this life. When people take ayahuasca or they do other things, a key part of the brain switches off. It's the part of the brain that regulates our conscious reality. It's called the default mode network. It was only discovered about a dozen years ago. So when people are experimenting with psychedelics or they're deep in meditation, this switches off. It's been proven that this switches off within coma patients, and therefore their expansion is just their consciousness. It's just expanding, and they're seeing the world without the filters in the same way that a shaman would be in the Amazon. And if two people incidentally do ayahuasca together and they're close, they may both go on the same journey together, not unlike Inception.
Well, I remember I've recounted this many times. Actually, I remember this is it's an insignificant experience in many ways in relation to sort of overwhelming experiences that we're talking about. But I do remember having a dream once, and in that dream meeting someone who I knew and had spent time with but hadn't seen for many years. And I said to them, I don't remember much else about the dream, but I said to them, "What are you doing here?" And they said, "Well, I have dreams too." And it felt, when I woke up, it was really, really, really profoundly shocking. You know, that initial time when you wake up after a dream and it seems so powerful, and but it fades very quickly, or most dreams do anyway. But when I initially woke up from that, I was just gobsmacked because I thought, I really felt I'd had a conversation with that person
Oh
who I hadn't seen for ages. And
Why is that not possible? I mean, it's
well,
entirely possible, I'm thinking.
exactly. Oh, exactly. Yes, but then we have this thing, don't we, about dreams not, are not real, on quote unquote. I remember being told that when I was a child, if I had a nightmare, the adults would say, "Oh, don't worry, it's not real." Well, excuse me, but it feels just about as real when it's happening. It's not only is it as real as anything in this waking reality, but as you point out, especially with the more powerful experiences, it feels more real than real, whatever that even means. I mean, I remember having another dream experience I recount sometimes because it was so overwhelming that when I woke up, I was really scared, and it was light outside, but I had these heavy curtains. The sun was just coming up, and I had to open the curtains to let light into the room because and they just needed to do that. In the dream, I was turning into a werewolf. And experiencing everything physically that that entails. You think about, say, something like American Werewolf in London, qu quite well done movie interpretation of that experience, man into wolf man. And it scared the hell out of me. I was absolutely terrified. And I woke up as the process was nearing completion. So I have to tell you, for at least an hour or so after that, that was pretty damn real. Who can say that I didn't experience something? And again, it's this idea of
Well,
the
I'll
mind
tell
and
you
the
who.
brain being the same thing, it's like as if mental experiences are not as real as physical ones.
Yeah, they tell you didn't experience it because they can't explain it. If you ask them to explain consciousness, their waking one, the one we're in now, they can't do that. So they haven't got the first chance of explaining the depths of consciousness that people can explore, be it on ayahuasca, be it in meditation, be it in coma. They can't explain those things. And the one thing about, doctors will say to a coma survivor, "Yes, you had coma dreams." A dream fades over time. So often, people within coma recounting their events will tell me that they had the emotional impact of, say, the birth of their child or falling in love for the first time, and that this is a memory for life, that it is burnt into their psyche. It will not be forgotten, particularly if you've left behind a family that you were in love with and you just left, like no conclusion, like suddenly just like the floor dropped away, and maybe you had a heart attack or something in that life and just died, and you've left it and you've left your loved ones behind. People can't re relate. They just can't bring themselves to accept that this world is real and that one wasn't, simply because people are telling them it's not real. Someone told me it's like this. It's like being, an explorer going off to distant lands only to return and being told by people who believe the world ends at the horizon that your trip to the new world is nothing more than a false memory or an hallucination. Because the people that are returning from events within coma thought they've been somewhere real. They know they've been somewhere real. And to dismiss it just leaves them even more confused, in many cases angry, in many cases questioning their sanity.
In Michael Berman's film Excalibur, I remember
Yeah,
this one
we really
scene.
going to the movies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do a lot of pop culture stuff as well, and and how it relates to subjects that interest me. But one of the knights of the Round Table is riding on his way to Camelot, and he meets up with a young boy, a young lad who wants to come along with him, because he just wants to be part of that world. He's got nothing going on in his own little local life. And he's really impressed by the knight and his armor and his sword and everything else. And the knight eventually says, "Okay, well, you can come, but it's I can't remember how many days." He said, "It's more than 5 days' ride from here." And the boy says, "That's not possible. The world's not that big. It can't be 5 days' ride. That just doesn't exist." So.
Well, that's a bit like the mind, isn't it? It's a lot bigger than anybody believes it to be. The things we can do with our minds, I mean, literally mind-blowing. You mentioned quantum physics earlier. Yeah, now we are learning that other dimensions are a distinct possibility. And we've been stuck with materialistic science, as in, you know, if you can weigh it, you can measure it, slice it up, look at it under a microscope, then it's, you know, it's you know, prime for investigation. Anything beyond that, anything of a non-physical realm, is not open to investigation. It's simply dismissed. And things like consciousness, from a doctor or a scientist's perspective, is best left to a philosopher. And then you just rubbish it anyway. No one understands. But I think we're now moving forward. I think we're at the cusp of something. And I think it's got a lot to do with artificial intelligence and the quest to understand the workings of the mind. And suddenly, I think a whole bunch of people, let's say computer engineers, who haven't been tied necessarily to a materialistic world outlook, are now starting to explore what might be possible in terms of other dimensions, other levels of consciousness. And when you talk to people, if you were to debrief coma survivors, you get the distinct feeling that there is this other place. It's all different for everyone, but this other place is that they go. When you talk to people that have been doing ayahuasca, for sure they've gone to a most distinct dimension, most distinct dimension. And people are waking up to that, doctors very slowly, some scientists, but computer scientists especially.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, really, talking about on the cusp of something, which I think is true. But in all the different conscious states we've been talking about, spontaneous or induced or whatever, there's these universal experiences, but they extend throughout time. As we also touched upon, there was a time when reincarnation was unquestioned. So it's almost now like, because we live in this scientific age, that people are starting to accept some of the ideas we're talking about, because science is just catching up. But of course, those with a scientific materialistic worldview, or you know, one that dominates their worldview, they for them, science leads knowledge and understanding. So therefore, these things are only now becoming interpreted by science, shall we say, if not understood, then maybe accounted for somehow. Well, that's okay now. But hang on a minute. You know, humans have had these experiences, and who knows, maybe other sentient creatures have as well, throughout, all of time, as far as we can see. So it's a little bit rich to be sort of saying, oh, utterly. You know, thank you, science, you know.
Not utterly, because, you know, if you take the near-death experience, maybe, actually, it's very hard to get a percentage, you know, in the number of people globally. But if you look at across time, across cultures, across continents, people are recounting more or less the same thing. It's kind of tailored to their hopes and aspirations. For example, I spoke to someone who lives in northern Italy, and inside her coma, she's in an alpine meadow. I dare say if I were to speak to a hunter from the far north, an Inuit, he might be on a frozen ice cap surrounded by walruses and seals, and that would be his idea, the way his mind might interpret events to ease him into the passing from this world to the next. It seems to be different for everybody. However, they're distinct things. You know, since, you go back to the Egyptian Book of the Dead, people that die and come back recall being in the Field of Dreams, I think it's called. It's like a perfect spiritual version of life in Egypt. You go talk to Native Americans. I've spoken to people who've done a lot of research in this. And the near-death experience forms a vital part of their afterlife knowledge. And again, they find themselves in the most beautiful landscapes. They will meet dead relatives, as people do all over the world, all over the different cultures throughout time. They will have very much the same experiences. So as you say, to dismiss this out of hand, I mean, the hubris in it, it's just crazy. So we're stuck in the world of Sir Isaac Newton and the apple falling from the tree, which incidentally, they can't explain gravity any better than Newton could then.
That concludes part one of our interview. Part two will be available soon in the subscribers area at legalizefreedom.com.
Legalizefreedom.com.